Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Look, couldn't be happier to be here. It's great, great to be joining you on the show today.
Yeah, and interested in chatting through with our guest today, you know, what not every marketer gets to do. I think it's a, you know, it's one of those projects that, you know, you may get to do one, maybe two in your lifetime as a, you know, as a manufacturing marketer, but they're pretty exciting and unique.
Yeah, yeah. And Jeff is referring to rebranding initiatives, which can be a challenge. I, you know, for a lot of manufacturers, they get pretty bought in to their brand, so the notion of change can be challenging, even if it appears as though the market may be demanding it. Sometimes the manufacturer internally might be the last one to know. So you know, it's always nice to chat with somebody who has successfully navigated these waters, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, so looking forward to diving into that. So joining us today is Nicole Kangos. Nicole is the marketing director at Snaptron. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Nicole.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're glad that you are here, Nicole. Did Jeff pronounce your last name correctly? I just want to make sure.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Nice.
like to lord this one over on me.
We just haven't had a look. So, for listeners, need to know my considerably better half is Greek, and today's guest is of Greek descent as well. So that's why I wanted to make sure that the name was pronounced correctly, because if it wasn't, I would hear about it later.
Oh, so this is about your own sanity.
It almost always is, which is tenuous at best. And then Nicole, let's jump along and understand. I'd like to know a little bit about the company and how you ended up there. So I guess first things first, tell us what you all are up to at the firm.
Yeah. Snaptron is a unique company. We are in a very niche industry of tactile switches, and particularly what we call dome switches. They are essentially a piece of stainless steel that when you press it, it actuates and creates an electrical contact. It's in all kinds of devices, everything from, you know, your key fob that you're unlocking your car with, to maybe when you press your Keurig coffee maker, or even things more critical like aviation cockpit panels and such. So the company's been around for about 35 years. It was started in a garage. The first owner was an engineer. And then that kind of ownership has been the case really for the entirety of the company. Always had a strong engineering presence, and we do a lot of our engineering in-house. It's located in Colorado, in Windsor, just about an hour north of Denver. Pretty small. We only have about 75 employees, but we manufacture. What makes us unique is we manufacture everything on site at the facility. We source all our steel from the U.S. So we like to say that we are proudly made in the U.S. I started kind of at the company just about 6-7 years ago now. I was brought in as a probably one of the first marketing hires at the time. And they didn't have a lot of investment in marketing in a traditional way, but they cared a lot about it. They always had a website. They always provided great, you know, products and samples and stuff to their customers. So it was always an important part of their strategy, but never very formalized.
It's an impressive trajectory. And, you know, it's always a compelling story when you, I like when you said the company hasn't, maybe hasn't always invested a lot in marketing, but they've always cared a lot about marketing. And, you know, caring is the precursor to enhanced investment for sure, which has clearly happened in the fact that you've grown a team and expanded the role of marketing within the firm. And so, Nicole, I guess at what point in this evolution did the notion of a rebrand occur and the requirement for it? How long ago was that?
For me, it was when I interviewed, when I first researched the company. And this is common in manufacturing where you see these really well-known brands that have been around for 50, 100, 80 years. But their look is, you know, looks almost 50, 80 or 100 years old. So when I was interviewing with them, everyone was saying that the company is so well known in the industry and has a really great high quality product. And that's what my research confirmed. But I just couldn't get over the mismatch to me and what they were presenting and then what their product was and what the brand was. So the reputation didn't match. So it was pretty early on that I pitched it to the owners at the time to see if they would go for it and prove the value that, you know, we could add, I think.
How was that received?
It was not received well at first. There was definitely pushback. Although in all fairness, I would say I have great leadership and they are always open to listening and hearing their team's ideas. You know, they brought me in for a reason. So they, you know, trusted my expertise in the area. And it really, beyond just some initial hesitation and resistance, once I pitched it formally provided my overview and strategy and plan to them, you know, there was not much resistance at that time and from that point.
You know, Nicole, you touched on something that, in our work here at Kula, even, I mean, I'm thinking in the last 8-9 years of working with manufacturers, 10 years, you know, and how often, I mean, it's probably the most frequent thing I've seen that the visual presentation, the marketing and sales presentation of the brand writ large does not match the quality credentials of either the workforce producing the product or of the product being produced itself. Like in so many cases, it seems like the marketing and sales apparatus is just being outshined by the actual thinking and the actual production. Whereas it's almost always the reverse in the rest of the world. You know, like the marketing is usually the sizzle.
And, the brand is awesome.
Yeah, and you don't know if there's anything in between. It's a really interesting thing about manufacturing, isn't it?
It is.
But there's also, you know, the part that how often either the founders or the family maybe that owns a company or whatever are really attached to the existing brand. From the outside looking in or when someone with a visual eye or a marketing eye looks at it and says, you know, this is kind of dated and here's why, the reaction is not necessarily always positive.
No, you have to be strategic in the way you bring up that conversation initially. My first and foremost priority when I started was building trust with my team and proving my value. So there was a lot of other little wins that I could take care of before I brought this up in a conversation and built that rapport, which I think is a very important step. And I would recommend anyone does that. They listen. You need to listen a lot before you come in and talk.
That's a great bit of advice. I hope the folks listening pay attention to that because you're right. I think the timing of this type of proposal is key. I'm also curious, was there anything happening in the competitive dynamic of the company, when you were, like, for instance, have you seen competitors kind of updating their look and potentially rebranding to connect with the market in a more or an enhanced way?
Yes. So at that time, my initial investigation, we are very niche, so we only have a few handful of competitors. But one of our main competitors in France had just done a complete rebrand and it was being really well received and they were repositioning themselves to some degree to be dominant in the aerospace sector, which is a core industry for us as well. So they came in very flashy. They are a bigger company that works in a lot of other spaces. So they just have a lot more revenue than we do. However, that was a big factor too, is what I was seeing in the landscape is we have a better product. We have the quality product. We're very much the leader in the space. However, we need to start looking like we are. Mm.
So it's as much about maintaining the leadership position as anything else.
Yes. Yeah.
How did you begin once you had buy-in and folks were interested in seeing your vision and bringing that to life? Where did you start?
Yeah, so at first I started with my director, my immediate boss, got her buy-in at the time and presented to her my proposal. And, you know, that came with some education as well around branding and why it matters and why it's important. You know, and she fully supported me, bought into it, agreed with my direction and strategy, and then suggested we go forth in front of our ownership and senior leadership team. And so I presented a very similar presentation to them and, you know, kind of discussed why, expanded on what is going on in the competitor space. That was a big part of it because we say we're leaders. So I really needed to drive home that, you know, we were looking behind. And then also our customers as well, which, you know, a lot of our customers had gone through rebranding as well in our space. So we were seeing the industry really look a different way all of a sudden from the visual identity perspective, at least. So it was very much just pitching my idea, breaking down the cost. You know, my boss helped me discern what would be a reasonable budget, which I felt was a lot smaller than probably what I needed, which I can get into a little bit more later in the conversation of how I had to get creative to work within my budget constraints. But, you know, once I pitched it and got that initial buy-in, you know, there was obviously questions, but a lot of education on branding, why it's important. You know, I think everyone sees kind of companies like Nike, and they get it. They get why branding matters. But how do you make that relevant in the manufacturing space? So
yeah, they get why it matters, but they may not think that it applies to them, right?
Exactly.
How did you get them to understand that the same rules may apply to them too?
I pulled examples of other manufacturers that went through something similar, maybe not manufacturers per se. Like, for example, I remember in my presentation, I included Cisco and their rebrand and spoke to that example. I also broke down my direct competitor's example. And I think that was very hard for them to see and hear and kind of got maybe the gears moving and excitement around it. Okay, we say we are number one in this space, but, you know, all of a sudden our competitor came in here and they look like they are. So yeah, that was a part of it, was just bringing those examples that felt more relevant to the space.
That is really smart. And I think the way that you're able to leverage FOMO with them is a really great way to make a point in terms of getting somebody's buy-in and getting them to see what's possible.
And a great example too, Jeff, I think of a marketer being able to show a company what the label looks like on the outside of the jar of the company versus what it looks like inside. You know, it sounds like really what Nicole described to us there is just this realization, this is what it looks like from the outside. This competitor over here, which we maybe underestimated in the past or what have you, or we certainly didn't think had the leadership position we have, all of a sudden appears as though it looks to be more of a leader. Like that's the only, that perspective can only come from outside, really.
Yeah, quality is perceived, right?
I have a former life spent working inside of politics, and one of the senators who tried to give us the rules of the road used to say, "Perception is reality; truth is negotiable."
Yeah, love that.
You're kind of knocking on the same door there. So, when we talk about the rebrand, how much of it is a visual representation of the of just how we look and feel, a reimagination, reimagining, if you will, of the visuals of the firm, versus how much did you delve into brand voice, the way the brand expresses its values, things of that sort?
Yeah, there was a big component of that, the latter of what you said. So I definitely positioned it in terms of more of a refresh, because I think that's what more accurately reflected it. A rebrand, I always associate with a little bit more of something like an example of like Comcast and Xfinity or something, when there's a really, really negative perception maybe of the company or the product. So I was positioning and using the term refresh a lot to my leadership team. But that being said, there was a great opportunity to revisit our mission, vision, and values, right? And that goes into a lot of what the brand is, right? That is the brand to some degree. So that being said, when I wanted to do this, one of the bigger things that I pushed for in the process of rebranding was getting engagement from our employees. So we did a series of surveys with our employees to get their feedback on what the brand is, why they work for Snaptron, and get that side of it, that kind of internal brand. And then we used that information to inform a workshop that we had with our senior leadership team and then some other key individuals that we identified in the company. It was funny, we were doing this during COVID, so we were all masked up, had 6 feet apart in a room, in a circle, talking to each other, and went through a full workshop where we really looked and dived into what is the mission, what is the vision, where are we going in 5 years? Because that informs the visual identity too, that informs the voice, that informs the positioning. All of that matters, because if we were going to say, oh, we are changing industries we're focusing on completely, or we only want to be competitive in this space anymore, you know, then that impacts the look, right?
What was the biggest, could you point to what would be the biggest shift or change in your impression of how that was going to go versus how it actually went once you engaged with the internal team to that extent? I'm always curious how much, because it's kind of holding up a mirror a little bit, you often see some things that you hadn't seen going in.
I think I was really pleasantly surprised how engaged everyone was in the process. I thought that I would get resistance, but what I actually saw was that everyone really cared about the company, cared about the brand, and invested in it. And we have a great history of a lot of our employees being at the company for 10 plus years. So, you know, that was very much reflected in those conversations. And I think being new to the company at the time, I was very impressed to see just how much everyone cared about the success of the brand as well as I did.
When you're coming out of those sessions reconciling what you had learned and kind of speaking it back to them, what do you think they kind of latched onto the most in terms of what you were able to discern and learn from them? Like what were the key points that made them go, yeah, no, I really get that. And I see where you're going with this.
That's a great question. I think that there was an obvious gap in some of our messaging that we were saying internally, we're good at this, we're great at doing this, but we weren't capturing that in the messaging and the positioning of the brand. So I think those conversations were very informing in that way, for me especially, to say, wait, okay, we are really good in this part of it, but we're not saying we are. So we need to bring that forth in the communication and the position when we redo this.
Well, I'm always curious too, when people are, when they say, oh, look, we're really good at this thing, or this, whether it's this kind of service area or a typical, you know, seen in a lot of different ways, but when they say, we're really good at this, but the brand really doesn't communicate how good we are there. And it kind of comes from, it seems almost two starting places, and I'm curious what your experience has been, Nicole, because it's either a result of the company's been so good at it for so long that they just take it for granted, and it's almost just baked in, or alternatively, it's been innovation that's kind of sprouted up from the employee base that is more significant than maybe leadership had understood it to be. I wonder which of those which bucket it might fall in.
That's very interesting. I kind of want to say a little bit of both. And I say that because it's always been a foundation of the company to have this very innovative mindset. It was actually part of their kind of slogan when I first rebranded Innovative Switch Solutions. So they said it a lot, and they said that they were innovative, and they very much are, and they were. But that's where kind of it started and ended, where they said it, right, is right in the slogan. and it wasn't really baked into the rest of the positioning and the messaging. And the how are we innovative and why are we wasn't really being answered for our customers either.
So those proof points weren't really being articulated in a meaningful way.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you mentioned that this was process was happening during COVID. And it strikes me that as hard as it was for you folks to collaborate internally during COVID, my goodness, it must have been really hard to get input from customers during COVID. Like, so did you have any kind of external kind of customer input into this process, or do you find a way to get their voice of customer fed into this?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you didn't overlook that. So we did have, we have in place what we call a technical advisory board, and we were meeting with them face-to-face yearly or bi-yearly. However, when COVID happened, we transitioned to meeting virtually with them. We didn't want to lose that touch point with that group. So this was one of the first bigger initiatives we brought to them in that capacity in the virtual way. And actually it was nice because we could share visuals with them very easily. We could record the conversation easily. So there was a lot of great, the structure of it actually worked out nicely for that use. And that is such a crucial part of the process. It's nothing you should overlook. So we definitely made sure that the look felt right to our customers before we moved forward with it, and that we were doing this for the right reasons. So they very much were advisors in that capacity and helped us, make sure this was the right move and for our business.
So you've got the internal feedback, and you've got the external feedback, and you have a sense of what people don't necessarily know about you as it comes to life in the brand. How did you approach that in terms of bringing it to life visually and in words, I guess?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So I took all that information from the workshops and assessed it, broke it down, created a creative brief for it, and then looked at partners, right? Who do I want to partner with to help me do the visual part of it and take a look, hard look at that and say, yeah, how are we missing the mark here? How do we appeal to a different audience and a broader audience for us at that time? We manufacture equipment, but you couldn't tell that from looking at our logo or our identity from the get-go. So we know we knew we needed to appeal and have a broader appeal in the visual look. And that, I think that helped informed itself when I did the creative brief. And then picking the partner, that was super crucial. So we went with a partner, very much like yourselves, that was familiar with the industry, manufacturing, the sector, I should say. So we knew that part of it was really crucial to getting the visual appeal right. That was an important choice that we made. Funny enough, though, so we picked a creative partner, and the cost of doing the actual logo and a piece of it from that partner was too big at the time. So we decided to go with this other solution. We basically went with this, I think it's called 99 Designs or something of that sort. I don't even know if it's called that anymore. But we essentially took this creative brief, pitched it to the design firm and the marketing firm that we wanted to work with, got their feedback on it. And then we, unfortunately, I would say for them, we wound up going with another vendor to actually design the logo did it in that way. And then went back when we did finalize the logo and look, went back to the marketing partner and had them design the rest of our assets, which was interesting. But in the grand scheme of it, I think it allowed that real creative freedom for the designer that actually did the logo to come forth with all kinds of different ideas and bring those to us unobstructed. But then the marketing partner knew exactly what brochures are, you know, knew what our design guide looked like and had a lot of familiarity with our customer base already. So understood, I think, how that would best look in terms of materials.
You had mentioned earlier around the budget constraints. Obviously, this is one of them. Were there others that impacted the project?
Just, I think, the staggering we needed to do. So, you know, there was an initial like capital investment that we made in the project, but there was pieces that we wanted to do that didn't happen until after. For example, apparel. You know, we wanted to get our employees updated apparel. Well, that kind of happened in the next fiscal year, right? So while we did push it through and got a lot done in that first 12 months, we also took certain things and said, these things can wait to the next cycle, right? You know, branded apparel was one of them. Even things like mugs. I mean, we really just ordered new updated mugs for our employees. So there was pieces that we couldn't really finalize right away. I think the message is there is that there are creative ways to rebrand and figure it out within the constraints that you might have that might be coming down from your leadership team.
Yeah, I mean, not every market, and certainly not if you're reasonably new to the organization, but it wouldn't matter if you're there 10 or 20 years. You know, it can be a hard sell to find all the budget necessary to do a project like this. I appreciate your candor and talking about how you kind of navigate that situation. Quite honestly, I think it's one of the hardest sells for a marketer is to try to sell their co-workers and senior leadership on what appears to be pure creative investment. Like why this logo that you can get 500 different versions of it from a website for $50, why is it better to spend $100,000 with firm X? And I could try to articulate some arguments for that here on this podcast, but more I would just say I think people listening should just know that they're not alone. This is a tough sell, and so if you find yourself trying to make it, it is a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even we decided, you know, the marketing firm that we worked with, we picked some core materials that they were going to design for us, some of our more important pieces. And then the rest was up to our team to design and mimic and take elements from that, build out the brand guide. So there was, I mean, even pieces like that. I mean, I created our brand guide. You know, we didn't have a firm do that. So there's ways around the constraints. And I think especially in manufacturing, you run up against those.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I wonder, Nicole, as we close this out and we kind of reflecting on the rebrand, because now it's been a few years and you've brought it to life. And I appreciate, you know, it is a ever-evolving initiative. And it takes a little while to get all the swag built up and things of that nature with the new identity. But what would you... as you look back on it, are there any either qualitative or quantitative indicators that you would point to say, this is how we know this is really working for us? This is why it was worth it.
Yeah, great, great question. So we set out when we first proposed it to look at external links and then also direct traffic. So how much of our traffic is coming in from just awareness about who we are in the first place. And we can confidently say that we've grown in those two areas over the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, that's been a good indicator. It's really hard sometimes to attribute the value to a project like this. But that being said, I think more people searching our brand online and knowing who we are really speaks for itself. There's been some bigger projects that we've gained over the years that we can tie to that direct traffic as well, which is really exciting proof for us. Not everyone gets that and has that clear of an indicator, but I would say look at where you started with your external link traffic specifically, and then your direct traffic.
And were you able to look at anything? Because I'm thinking too, the brand. the quality of the way the brand presents the credentials of the firm can sometimes show through in just kind of in sales close rates. If we're communicating the quality credentials of the firm more appropriately, then often more people will say yes. So have you noticed any kind of close rate differential as well on the sales side?
That's a great question. I would love to get back to you and say yes or no on that. And I can't confidently say it would be a nice bow tie for the story to say yes. But
it's bad of me to put you on the spot right at the end of a podcast with that very specific question. But
I don't know if this is an indicator of that, but I can say that our lead conversion rate has been a lot higher in the last 3 to 4 years. So that just might indicate that, you know, we're closing the business faster. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the reputation of the brand, the trust in it. I don't know. That's very interesting, but I will dig into the numbers there.
Well, we look forward to having you back on the show to explore the numbers in more detail in version 2. But Nicole, it's been amazing to have you on the program. It's been nice to get this insight into your rebrand initiative. Thank you for sharing it with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it and look forward to a follow-up conversation.
Yeah, great to have you on the show.
Thank you.